Supposedly, the SAG-AFTRA strike ended on November the 8th. It halted film and TV production for several months, and there were over 160,000 actors on strike looking for higher minimum pay, a share of revenue from streaming services, and their consent if their likeness is reproduced by AI. I'm Lexi, and this is Delightfully Different. A few weeks after the strike ended, I had the chance to talk to my next guest. He was a strike captain and can tell us what it was really like to be a striking actor and what it was really like when picketing.
Yeah, so hi, my name is Justin Graber. I'm an actor, writer, stand-up comic, producer, a bunch of other stuff. I wear a lot of hats, and I was also a strike captain for a couple days during the strike for SAG-AFTRA. Well,
and congratulations on the strike finally ending, which has to be a relief to you and everybody else that's in the in that industry.
It's actually not technically ended yet. It's actually we all have to vote on the contract.
And what?
A lot of us are reading the contracts now. And WGA, the Writers Guild of America, in their contract, it specifies AI cannot replace a human. And we don't have that verbiage in our contract anywhere.
Really?
Yeah. So I'm in an acting class, and I was talking with one of the other actors yesterday. She was, before the strike even started, she got booked on a Marvel TV show.
Oh.
And they came to her with, they wanted to scan her body for AI.
Oh.
And she had to go jump through hoops with her, her manager and agents. And they came back to her and said, like, all right, well, what's going to happen is if you say no to this, you're going to be fired, and they're going to find a new person to do your role and also get their body scanned. So they've been doing this even before the strike even happened. And she's like, oh, I ended up doing it. I'm kind of screwed now because now they have my body and they can use it however they want, whenever they want.
Really? So they can, once they take that, they can continue to use it in other stuff and not pay you for it?
Yes. Yeah.
That's even worse than in voice acting. Holy cow.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that. First of all, what were you striking for? Because it wasn't just AI. It was all kinds of stuff. And then what did you end up so far getting that you haven't quite gotten yet?
So I'm still like reading. I still haven't even read the contract yet. So I was just out there supporting. I know that AI was a big issue for the SAG strikes. And that was primarily my reason. Also with residuals. The way the residuals work is, well, streaming, there hasn't been a lot of residuals at all. And I guess the networks were saying that they can't really compute that, which I know is BS because I'm part of a YouTube channel called A Combat Veteran, where we can see which videos specifically are bringing in the most money that are getting recycled. So like when videos get recycled on YouTube, they'll put different ads within those videos that have done well, and YouTube will recycle them and use their own algorithm, put new ads in, and then we get ad revenue from whatever is streaming.
Right.
So we're able to see that on YouTube. So, it doesn't make sense that a Netflix streaming service would say that when we know it's BS.
Right.
So that's another thing that the actors were really fighting for as well, to get better residuals so that our in between our jobs, we're able to sustain our ways of living and cost of living. And unfortunately they keep saying no to all these demands. And now that we're reading this contract, it's like, it's interesting. Cause it's like, there's a lot of stuff in the contract that benefits A-list actors, but not us people trying to get up to that A-list spot.
So. Interesting. Cause I think the perception is for the average person, the average American, they're like, what are all these rich millionaire famous people doing wanting more money? They don't realize that the average actor is not Brad Pitt.
Yeah.
The average actor is working their butt off and not making a whole lot of money.
Yeah. And after a few years of like getting residual checks from like a TV show, I haven't worked on a TV show yet. I did work on Dog with Channing Tatum. My scene was cut. I was only like whispering lines for the flag folding ceremony or whatever for the military scene there.
Yeah.
I served in the army as well. So like I know enough about that to get paid for it.
Right.
And like the first residual check I got after like 6 months after the movie came out was like for $1,000. 3 months after that, it was $600. 3 months after that, it was like $300. And it just keeps going down. And eventually it goes down to like a penny. you know, right. And like, I mean, like pennies on the dollar, and like, can't even go to a Starbucks and get a coffee. So
no,
starving artists. They want to keep us starving, I guess.
And I think most of the actors are starving artists, and they do want to keep you starving for sure. When you were, what did you do exactly as the strike captain? When did you do it, and what were your duties?
So strike captaining, I did a few days at WB and a few days at Paramount, and pretty much was just like, keeping people safe within the means of like crossing the streets and things like that.
Yeah. Whenever
the lights were red, like we made sure that nobody was getting hit by vehicles. I did a lot of, personally, I did a lot of like runner jobs. So like if certain gates needed different, like food and drinks, I would go run those gates, snacks and stuff like that to keep people fueled up out there. My good friend BJ Lang did a lot of spearheading with the strikes as a strike captain. He primarily did Paramount. He brought in like 222 Tuesdays. So every Tuesday people were wearing tutus.
Okay.
Just to keep things interesting and not boring. Obviously we're out there in the heat and all that stuff. So
yeah, for a long time. And you said that there was food and stuff. Did people bring you guys food? Were people feeling for you and bringing you stuff?
Yeah. And there were a lot of like A-list actors who were donating to like food trucks and stuff like that so that we would have free food even, which was nice. Very nice of them. I know there's an ice cream truck a few of those days out there and a lot of coffee trucks and things like that. So.
And what about like going to the bathroom? How did you deal with those situations?
I just never had to go. So I was okay. But there were a few like establishments in the surrounding areas that were supportive of what we were doing, understood what we were doing and why we were doing it, what we were doing it for. We were able to use their restrooms.
Well, like what were the hours that you were striking? Was it like 9 to 5? Was it like,
it was like, no, it was like 8 a.m. to 12 p.m. Some days we would go till 1. Only because of the heat, we didn't want any people to have any like heat casualties or anything like that.
Yeah.
Just keeping them safe in that aspect. Personally, I think we should have like, somebody should have been out there 24/7. Doesn't matter on holidays. Somebody probably should have went on a hunger strike. It would have been easy. We're all starving anyway. just to stick it to the man. Like I was gonna volunteer too, but I think, I don't know if enough SAG members vote no on this contract, I think we need to go back on strike. And what needs to happen is we need to pick a date. And throughout some of the meetings that we were on, we understood that there was 70% plus of the population that understood why we were striking.
Yeah.
And if there's 70% plus, then we really need to hit these networks at their bank accounts, the AMPTP. We need to like take the money away from them, set a date and be like, and tell everybody, cancel all your subscriptions. We're not getting residuals anyway. Take the money away from them. And then when they see their bank accounts going low, they've already lost millions of dollars. They could be like, well, what's going on? And we'll be like, step in and say that this is happening because of us. And that actually puts us in a better position to be like, now we actually want more of a percentage. And maybe you should give the writers more of a percentage as well and right. Start taking care of people. Like I was in the Army for 8 years. I did 4 deployments overseas. So I understand like taking care of the people who are serving underneath you is one of the most paramount things you could do. Oh, look at that paramount. One of the most paramount things you could do as a leader, you know, their morale is what's most important. Their morale and welfare is what's most important in order to like win a war or like get people home safe within those kinds of environments. So.
Do you think that being in the military maybe gave you some skills to help you be a strike captain on the days that you did that?
Yeah, obviously like safety, it was always an issue in the military and we had to do a lot of like risk assessments whenever we were doing movements or anything like that, or missions and things of that nature. So yeah, I think that it parallels. There's a lot of parallels actually that go within the military, serving the military and even the film industry. Just
really?
Yeah. Cause it's like a bunch of different like groups of people working together to make one thing happen.
Right.
You know, you got the infantry, you got logistics, you got supply, you got the cooks, you got the truck drivers and everyone's just like coming together to make one thing happen. Same with the film industry. You got, you know, the props, you got your makeup department, hair, actors, you got the ADs, the the PAs, everybody's like working together in different departments and just trying to get one thing rolling, one ball rolling.
It's interesting. It's a well-oiled machine. I've done some background acting, and it's watching everything happen is it's like ants making stuff happen. It's crazy. Yeah. Personally, how many days did you go out and picket?
I tried to go out at least once a week throughout the strike. When I was doing the captaining, I went out maybe twice a week those weeks. But then, they wanted us to do like at least three days a week, eight to noon. And I was like, this is cutting into some other stuff I could be doing, which, you know, kind of led me to trying the stand-up comedy route. So
it does seem like it would cut into a lot of your time. I mean, that's a lot of stuff you're doing for free.
Yeah.
Do you feel like you lost out on some stuff when you were choosing to picket, or maybe some of the other people that were out there picketing?
I mean, maybe a little bit, but like I'm kind of in an okay spot because I get money through social media, through the combat veteran page and stuff like that. That's actually kind of died down throughout the years. We were doing really well in 2020 when everybody was stuck at home for COVID and just watching YouTube videos all day.
Right. Well,
yeah, we kind of hurt ourselves in 2021 because we were trying to get away from social media. We wanted to have our own app, which is interesting because if we would have kept that going, perhaps we could have stepped in and offered actors what they were wanting, and maybe it would have helped our app blow up. We had our own app. It was a subscription based $4.99 a month, and we were putting all of our content up there, all of the sketches that we did from online, and then we did a few short films. Those are actually behind me, and then we did like a TV miniseries, Western comedy. All of this stuff was just streaming on our platform. We had it for one whole year, 2021. And then it was through Vimeo. At the end of that year, it was just me and my production partner, Drew, just writing, acting, directing, producing, editing, sound design, color correction, and some of the bigger projects like the short films we would outsource for that.
That's a lot. Okay. Those are each individual skills that are difficult.
Yes. But at the end of that year, it was just like, we didn't take any breaks. He was like, hey, they want us to renew. What do you want to do? It was like $26,000 for the year to have that app. And I was like, I can't do this again. This is hell. Our goal is to hit 10,000 subscribers, but we only tapped out at like 3,000.
Okay.
If we got to that 10, we would have been all right, because we would have been able to bring on like an editor to take some of the weight off of our shoulders, or like, you know, bring in other people for all that.
That's tough.
Yeah. So, but then he went to go, production partner went to go to tell Vimeo we were done. They thought we were jumping ship to a different host, and they offered 50% off.
Oh.
Back, and he was like, hey, they said this. And I was like, the knife's already in my heart. It feels like he just twisted it. Because that means they could have did 50% off the first year, and that would have helped us. Because we broke even that year. We raked in $120,000 that year, but we spent it all on production, actors, locations, obviously, is probably the most expensive stuff, and somehow broke even with our first year of being in business, which is unheard of. Like, most people are in the negative.
Absolutely.
We look back at that in hindsight, and we're like, maybe we should have kept it going. But, you know, things all happen for a reason. 2022, we did a stage play. We did a GoFundMe and raised enough funds for that. Put that up in North Hollywood. The goal was to sell that out. We didn't sell out, unfortunately. But that's streaming online at www.weenlisted.com for a donation. You can watch the entire 2.5 hour long play. In my opinion, I think like Act Two needs some work. We can either rewrite some of Act Two, but the rest of that play is really good. We got a lot of good reviews from it. It follows an Army unit before, during, and after deployment, and it's all comedy. It's really, really stupid humor. A lot of veterans will get and understand, but it's written in a way for civilians to understand too, because part of our goal is to like showcase to civilians that serving the military is not that much different than serving or than from any other civilian job. It's like, aside from being shot at, a lot of the same things that you guys experience in the civilian world when it comes to fraternization and people getting into relationships that they shouldn't get into. And, you know, you're not supposed to shit where you eat in a workplace. Like, this all happens in the military too. So
interesting, huh?
Yeah. It was we're trying to show, we're trying to kind of humanize the soldier
experience.
Yeah.
When you were picketing, did you feel support from non-actors? Were people driving by and like, screw you guys, honk honk, or were they like, yeah, stick with it?
No, yeah, most of them were saying stick with it. I didn't come across any people that were too like in person that were against it. There were a lot of like crew members who were commenting on social media apps that because we're striking, we're hurting them.
Right. And
while that's true to some extent, it's not like it should have actually influence them to maybe start their own unions.
Do they not have a union? The behind the scenes,
there's a lot of crew people. Yeah, PAs don't have a union. VFX artists don't have a union. There's a lot of like crew members in post production that don't have unions.
Okay,
there are some that do, but a lot of them that don't, and a lot of them don't get residuals, but they could be unionized and asking for that too with all the money that's being made with filmmaking, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's a big job what they're doing, and a technical skill that's difficult.
Yeah.
There were a lot of very famous people who were supporting you and actually going out onto the picket lines. Were there any super famous people that were there along with you or that you noticed when you were out there?
I ran into Bryan Cranston, who I actually pulled aside to try to speak with him for a little bit. And he just gave me the cliche keep going speech, you know. I was like, I don't need to hear that right now, because I went to USC for theater, and he actually came to USC while I was there and spoke with a bunch of us students. And he even said, he like kind of opened the door as an invitation, hey guys, I have Moonlight Entertainment, if you ever have something, just try to reach out. But obviously didn't give his you know, contact information. So yeah. I did some research. I found his lawyers and I reached out to them and told them about Enlisted and some of the other stuff they were doing.
Yeah.
And, they emailed me back asking about copyright stuff. All of the stuff that we've done has gone through WGA, and Enlisted, the play, was actually, we went through like the government copyright route. So I'm like, yeah, this stuff is, you know, it's all accounted for and all that stuff. So you maybe got
a foot in the door with that then?
No. And then they just ignored my emails, okay, from them, which is what happens. Seeing him at the picket, I was like, hey, this is my opportunity. I pulled him aside, started talking to him. He's like, yeah, well, you have to have an agent to, you know, really pitch that stuff. And while that's true, it's not always true. And I was like, hold on a second, sir, you actually came to USC and you said these words. And he was like, oh yeah, 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 you're right. So it's like, I know that's like the preferred route, but it's also, you know, not right. How things always happen. There are
Years, right? I mean, stuff changed in the past few years.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Of course. I mean, yeah. But he just gave me the whole cliche, like, sounds like you're doing everything you need to be doing. Just keep on doing it. And I'm like,
I'm Lexi, and this is Delightfully Different. Today, I'm talking with Justin, an actor, comedian, writer, and he was a strike captain during the SAG-AFTRA strike.
How long did the strike last?
Shoot. I don't know the exact days. It's like a few months, 3 or 4 months.
Are you glad that it's done? I mean, it might not be done, but are you glad that it's done for the time being?
Well, no, because there's still no work right now, because everyone's like, has to vote by December 3rd. This
good so. Lord, are there some sort of things that you could do in acting that would not break the rules of the strike, that would not make you a scab if you were to
stand-up comedy?
Okay. So you did a lot of that during the strike.
Yeah, well, I started it a couple months before October 7th was my first show in Dallas-Fort Worth, the one that you watched. I did 10 minutes on stage, I killed it, and then November 11th, I went to New York City and did a show at Yonkers Comedy Club there and bombed. So,
oh, no.
Yeah,
it was in New York.
Very, all the stuff I've learned as an actor, I was implementing into my set and stuff like that. But for some reason, I mean, I know what happened at Yonkers. Like, I felt like I was overprepared. I was trying to barrel roll through my set. I wasn't present with the audience. They weren't, I noticed I wasn't getting laughs like I was at Dallas Fort Worth. So like that made me get in my head, and I was just like, yeah, I just bombed. And it's bad, but it needed to happen. The Wednesday after that, I was back in LA. I reached out to another stand-up comic friend of mine, Josh, and asked him if he had any shows coming up. He told me about a show Wednesday night, went out Wednesday night, took the stage again, started rocky, and then I found my footing, my pacing again. So I was like, okay, it's just a flub. This might happen again. I hope it doesn't, but
It happens to every comic several times.
Yeah.
Everybody. What was the general vibe of the people who were striking in the beginning? And then what was it like towards the end here? Were people getting exhausted?
No, it was pretty consistent throughout, I would say. Like, I mean, from day one, people were wishing that they would just, you know, the AMPTP would just strike a deal.
Yeah.
You know, like, I guess you could say maybe there's a little frustration that it went on longer than it needed to. And that also we might be going back on strike.
Right. And I see the agreement was only for 3 years.
Yeah, which is interesting because like if everyone says yes, then with the verbiage that's in there that doesn't have the word human in it, then what can happen is they have 3 years to start doing what they did to my classmate and saying like, oh, if you don't get scanned, then we're going to get somebody else who wants the job and will get scanned.
Right.
Just take that person's AI or, you know, scanned version of them and be able to use them. They have 3 years to build what they want,
right?
Which is a digital world of actors. Right. And then that will make our job all obsolete.
Yeah, absolutely.
Can do then at that point is stand up. But at that point, they'll probably just be making whatever digital scans they've had
and AI comedian
writing their own jokes with their own AI, you know?
Right, exactly. It's kind of like that episode of Black Mirror that was in the latest season.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
We saw it where the AI people, mm-hmm. all the actors were AI, and it was interesting. It kind of reminded me of real life for sure. Are you playing catch up now that I guess it's really not over? I'm wondering if maybe you've got any auditions or people are starting to do stuff again.
I've had like one audition since then, but I mean, commercials are still happening.
Are commercials against the rules?
Yeah, yeah. Well, commercials were, they're kind of like they go under a different like thing.
Okay.
So commercials never stopped filming throughout the whole strike. So there was some work for us, but it's few and far between. And when the plethora of actors are going after the one job and stuff, I think I worked one commercial gig, but it was like a background role. So like if I don't make it in the spot recognizable within 2 seconds, then I don't get any residuals from that, but I got paid for the days that I was shot.
Right. Nice. Interesting. So your comedy special, what's it called?
It's called Fourth Time's a Curse.
And where can people find it?
People can find that at www.justongraber.com/comic.
And you said you filmed that in Texas?
Yes, Dallas-Fort Worth.
Yeah. Dallas-Fort Worth, and the audience loved it, and I thought it was very funny. Why did you choose to film the one in Dallas?
Well, so my production partner Drew and I have a veteran following. So in July, Drew went to go do 4 different shows all over Texas in different cities, in Killeen, I think San Antonio, Dallas, and Houston. And then he came back, and I was going through like my own little like depression thing from the strike or anything, but just going through life changes, I guess. And he came back and he was like, hey man, have you decided what you want to do yet? And I was like, I don't know. I still don't know. I'm kind of up in the air. I want to write this book that's about my second deployment, which I started. And I'm making more time to do now. And he was like, I want you to come to the Dallas-Fort Worth show October 7th, read this book. And it was a stand-up comedy book, the new stand-up comedy Bible by Judy something. So I read the book, got 10 minutes together, started rehearsing it, went with him. And we had a sold out 300 seat theater, ISIS Theater at Dallas-Fort Worth.
Were you really not doing comedy before that?
I mean, I was doing sketch comedy and like comedy here and there. Like some of all the sketches that we've done online that make fun of the military are all comedy.
Yeah.
The play, the full length play was a comedy.
But stand up is way different than that.
It is. Yeah. I'm learning that the hard way.
Well, in your first time doing it, you had how many people were in the audience?
300.
That's a lot for your first time doing it. I thought you were joking when you said this is my first time up here, but it really was.
No, 100% true. Yeah.
Congratulations. Holy cow. Yeah. That must have felt fabulous when you got off the stage.
Oh, it felt, really good. Definitely. I went on a binge drinking celebration.
Yeah. I'm sure you did. Yeah. Now, I paid $1.44 to see it on your website.
Yeah, I get 90 cents of that or something like that.
I was gonna say, how did you come up with that price, $1.44 to watch?
Just the 44 came from the fourth time's a curse, and then it's only like a 10-minute special. I think it's like 12 minutes total actually. And this is how I'm paying my rent. And I thought about doing, like, a lot of my friends were like, oh, you should put it online and on YouTube and stuff like that. I'm like, I don't have a big enough following on my own YouTube page. So that's not going to make us any money. Right. And I know what I'm worth. I know I'm worth a lot more than $1.44. So I'm just going to price this and put it up there. And on my website too, we have like Heist, Orisha, and Spread, which are the three of the short films that we've done. And you can rent those for like $3.79 or something like that as well. And those are all, they're like 20 minute short films, a little bit longer.
Was it difficult for you to find your funny when trying to write this comedy during the strike?
No, I think from my military background and like a lot of the dark humor that I have, it's easy for me to find funny within like dark stuff, you know?
Yeah.
So I was just writing from my own personal experience of serving in the military, and then like the suicide ventures I've gone down.
That could have really gone either way. When you started talking about the suicide, I was like, this is freaking funny. I hope these people are laughing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Some people were actually taking it seriously.
Yeah. There was one person, a female former soldier who left crying, who came back to speak with me, but she left crying. Apparently my suicide jokes cut too deep. Some of them. But she came back and spoke with me with her husband, and she thought that I was being disingenuous, and I was like, no, like all of this story up there is 100% true. I've gone through attempted suicides, and I've lost four friends to suicide.
Right. Yeah, it seemed very real to me, and I was very impressed that you found the humor in all of that, and I loved that the audience was laughing at it and relieved. I'm wondering, did you do those same jokes when you didn't do so well in New York?
No, I wrote a whole new set, and it
was
like for New York specifically. But also it was the wrong audience for it. And because I wasn't like, I was delivering, my delivery was totally off. My timing was totally off. I was
okay. It wasn't the suicide jokes then.
Yeah. I was second guessing it. I brought the suicide joke back on that Wednesday that I went up, and everyone was laughing at that. So I was like, yeah. So I knew I was going to keep that joke. I just wanted to try some new stuff.
Right. It's a tough subject, but you handled it well.
Yeah. As a comic, you want to try new stuff as well too.
Right.
Doing the same things over and over.
What is Anthony Roy Productions?
So Anthony Roy Productions is the production company started by my production partner and I, Drew Anthony Hernandez, and I'm Justin Roy Graber. So we put our middle names together.
Oh, and okay.
Productions a thing.
And is that Enlisted? Is that you guys doing Enlisted?
Enlisted fell under a combat veteran. So we have like two separate entities, and Anthony Roy Productions is like kind of the production company that we do more of the like civilian catered short films on.
Okay.
And a combat veteran was the one that we were doing the all the military humor.
Do you find that you have a large military and veteran following because you are a veteran and because you do a lot of jokes about it and content about it?
Yeah. So Drew started his YouTube channel, Combat Veteran, in 2015. I was brought in 2019. I met him on the street of Hollywood. I saw him. He actually had just released I was never like a hardcore fan of his. Like I always liked his stuff, but I never like watched it religiously. But I remember a few weeks before seeing him on the street, I saw a video of him like making a rant about how people approach him on the street and just call him a combat veteran. He's like, my name's Drew. Just call me Drew, please. I'm sick of being called a combat veteran. I saw him and I was like, a combat veteran. Cause I couldn't remember. And he was like, fuck, I got to talk to this guy now. But then we started talking about filmmaking. I was already out of USC at that point, but I was shopping for a short film that I was co-producing with two other people at the time. and I got him involved on Tenet because I was booked on Tenet, the Christopher Nolan film.
Okay.
Just as a background actor, but they were paying background like veterans 300 over eight.
That's so, nice.
Because they don't have to train us how to hold a weapon and look
right. Like, I guess that's true. Yeah.
You did have to learn how to run backwards though. So all of those effects that you saw in that movie Tenet where people are running backwards as other people are running forwards, that's us practically doing that in real time. There's no VFX. Which is very interesting, but very cool. And while we were there, we wrote Arisha together. He wanted to write a horror film. I put up $7,000. He put up $7,000. I think total we spent like 25 after post production.
And you got to be the scary monster person that was possessed or something. I saw
I was possessed in that. I'm like a faithless soldier that's kind of put through.
Okay.
Like now I believe. Or who knows? We'll see what happens at the end of the movie. But after that shoot went so smooth. Drew found a lot of the crew members that we used, and we both made it a point to like do walkthroughs of everything. Drew had everybody on the same page, and it went phenomenally. And then since then we've done Heist, which is like a kind of like an action-y, not really action, maybe a little bit of action. Action is very expensive, so
right,
gotta figure out how to do stuff. It's like action drama, suspense, and then spreads kind of like a thriller. Drama. That's a pandemic movie that I actually had we shot over the pandemic. I had this idea before the pandemic even hit, and I told Drew about it, and he was like, that's interesting, let's do that. And it was based off of World War Z, and that movie, like, they show zombies that are ignoring sick people, and it gave me this idea, like, what if a virus broke out? And we found out through hygiene hypothesis that because homeless people eat out of garbage cans and stuff, they're actually the cure for the virus. But when we ask them for help, they go into hiding and just wait for natural selection to take its course.
Well, now I'm going to have to pony up $3 and watch this.
Yeah, yeah. Really good. Drew added a really good aspect of the issue of healthcare. Okay. So we have a different healthcare system that we made up for this movie.
Okay. In particular.
And there's a very heartbreaking scene there. So like I'm playing a government social worker, and Drew's my Spanish interpreter. We're going around making sure people are taking their medicine. You need to take your medicine.
In my opinion,
I haven't seen Songbird, but I heard a lot of bad things about it. But in my opinion, Spread is better than Songbird and shorter.
Okay. So those are the ones that
Sorry, Michael Bay. No.
You said you had a small part in Dog, and I saw that online that you were in some other stuff. What are the other bigger things that people might recognize that you've been in?
I think Dog's the biggest thing I've been in. All the other stuff is stuff that I've written and produced up by myself, or like little short films here and there.
You and I were in something together.
Oh, we were.
I know there's no way you remember. I don't even think we met.
Really?
I was in a pilot for something that Vince Vargas wrote called Throwbacks SLC.
Oh yeah. Okay.
I was the health inspector.
Oh yeah. That's good.
I never got a chance to see it, and I didn't go to the party that they had for it and everything. So I've never even seen myself in it, but when I was researching you, I was like, no kidding. That must have been how I ended up on your mailing list, was we were in that.
Yeah, that's nuts. That's crazy.
I don't remember which part you had. Were you at the happy ending scene?
Yes, I was the happy ending and the bartender, yeah.
Okay, well, I was the health inspector that walked in and looked disgusted by what you were seeing.
I was facing the other way, so yeah.
Because then I don't think we ever actually got to meet before that happened, but it's nice to meet you now. That's too funny.
That is crazy, yeah.
Yeah, it's a small world. Now, have you gotten any good at singing? I saw you were trying to sing online.
Yes, I've been in singing classes since like March of last year. My singing teacher tells me I'm pretty good, so
good.
I'm probably not going to belt out a song here on the podcast.
Well, I tried to find you singing online, but you had something music over it, and it was just clips of you practicing, so I was hoping to hear you sing.
I'll put it back up there. I'm trying to make new, I wanted to make new videos for that, and make new reels for that as well. But
I'm looking forward to hear your beautiful voice. And do you have any specials coming up, any shows, comedy shows, or anything that's coming out that you want to promote?
We're looking at possibly doing something in December in Fort Polk, Louisiana.
Okay.
Another Army post out there.
Right on. I'll be looking out for it, and I'll make sure to tag your socials, your website, so people can watch your comedy special and all the other stuff you got on there and any sort of events you've got coming up. I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to me today.
Yeah, of course. Thank you. Appreciate it, Lex.
Since I spoke with Justin on December the 5th, a deal was reached. Union members voted and they got most of what they wanted. Some of the actors are still concerned with AI. While studios can't use their likeness without permission, they can create synthetic performers and eliminate the need for real human actors. The writers also went on strike and reached a deal in October. I've posted links to all of Justin's socials, his stand-up special, and his shows wherever you're listening. And thanks for joining me this week on Delightfully Different. Coming up next week, I talk to a Lego professional. She's an adult who plays with Legos for a living. If you or someone you know lives life differently, email me, LexiOnTheRadio@gmail.com. That's LEXI onTheRadio@gmail.com, or go to DelightfullyDifferentPodcast.com. Until next Thursday, have a delightful week.